Hello and welcome to another episode of the My Control Room podcast, the only podcast that features discussion, commentary, and tips regarding control room ergonomics, alarm management, human factor interface, and much more.
Hello, this is Ian Nimmer with User Centered Design Services, and we are one of the companies that provides human-machine interface services. We start by following the life cycle model of today's standards, and again, in particular, the ISA SP101 standard. And that life cycle model states that you should start with a philosophy document, and that philosophy document is extremely important and should be well written so that it guides developers who are developing HMIs into what they can and can't do in a HMI design. And again, the philosophy document is not limited to a SCADA system, a DCS system. It's for everything that has a user interface that appears on the operator desktop. We do style guides for particular vendors based on that philosophy. And again, we try to make sure that when somebody's developing graphics, that we get consistency and we get accuracy and clarity, and that the HMIs are designed well so that they're a useful tool for operators, and that there's a good clear coding system, a very easy navigation system, etc. And that's the foundation before anybody starts putting pen to paper or starts building graphics on a control system. They must understand those rules. We offer workshops to help educate people on what are the best practices around HMI design. Often we'll do a two-day workshop introducing the topic to our customer, and then we will take our template philosophy document and then basically update it with customer specifics. So, for example, things that change often are the three colours that's used for alarm management, or maybe four colours, depending on how you developed your system. And you know, those vary, so we have to update the philosophy with your colours. And then the next thing is the objects that you use. You may be using the vendor's standard objects, or you may have bought a third-party set of objects like the ones provided by Linden Associates, which is, again, a tool that provides good objects for building graphics. Or you may be building the graphic object yourself, and what we try to give you is a template so that those objects get documented so that in the future, 10 years down the road, somebody wants to use the object, they fully understand the behavior of that object and how it's going to work and what they need to do to configure it. So we lay that foundation down of getting started with good graphics. From there, we start at the overview graphic, what we call the level one graphic, which is often appears on a large screen display or sometimes a projector system these days. But that overview graphic, which may be a 60-inch graphic, it could be a video wall of 60 feet, 100 feet, it varies from customer to customer, but it provides an overview of the process for the operators. And we have a good methodology for identifying what are the critical information that should go onto that overview graphic. And we use a task analysis methodology called CADET, which is critical actions and decisions, effectively. And we take those critical actions and decisions and what information is required for them, and we put that information on the screen. And we have many different ways of showing that information depending on the customer, the operator, how close the screens are, etc. And we actually sketch and document those graphics to allow a graphic builder to go and build those graphics. We can actually do task analysis for the level 2 and level 3 graphics as well. Often the graphic builder will often do that though, but they don't often go into the same detail as we do, looking at the consistency the way we do. We look at it from a human factors perspective, and they often look at it from an engineering perspective and just copying a P&ID and making it a duplicate of the P&ID, which may have errors anywhere. I've seen some very common mistakes on P&IDs be copied onto graphics, and the graphics designer had no idea that what they were looking at was rubbish. So you get a bit of a laugh about that, but it's not funny when it ends up on a project and an operator looks at it and says, "What the heck is that?" And it was just a mistake on the drawing, which got copied. So we do that task analysis. We also do reviews of your existing graphic systems, so we can make recommendations on how to improve them. What are some of the issues, and how do you judge a graphic, whether it's good or bad? We can actually give you a tool that allows you to evaluate your own graphics and be able to judge whether they're good or bad. We also look at some of the physical things, the viewing angles, number of screens. Some common mistakes are making, some people have 2-3 high screens and you've got the potential for repetitive stress injury. Some people put 60-inch screens and they put them up high on the ceiling. Again, potential repetitive stress injury. An operator's not going to look up there because it's just too hard, too difficult to do it, so they just ignore them. So you waste your money on those type of implementation projects. So we try to help you understand how can you, with your existing environment, provide a good HMI display, which is the physical part, the hardware part, and it's also the software part. And today, because of some of the new rules around fatigue, most customers have realized that the regulators are really pushing for sit-stand furniture. And as we do sit-stand, it means that screen angles need to change between those two operating positions. And we have automatic tools that do that. We'll actually move the screens to a different angle. And again, some of that's going to be based on the person and the height of the person. And it's got to accommodate a full range from a P5 person to a P95 person, which is, is recorded in the standards. And again, a lot of people don't understand all that's behind that information, and again, good knowledge of the international standards is really required. And one of the questions, if I was a customer, I would ask somebody that's coming in, tell me about the international standards and which ones are you going to be using, and which ones do you take guidance from when you're designing things like screens and the screen angles, etc. And if the person doesn't have a clue, get rid of them. Right. If they can't quote the things like ISO 11064 or ISASP 101 and know what they're about, they have no right to be building graphics. So what's some of the common mistakes that people make on graphics? One thing is that they like to be artists, right? And they like to, when they're drawing things like pipes, they like to make them look like pipes. In fact, we see welds and we see rivets and we see things like that on graphics, and shadows and stuff like that. Well, I'm sorry, a pipe is a fixed piece of information. It doesn't change. It's just a reference point. And that should be right in the back of the graphic. If you animate it or you make it so that it stands out, it's going to be in the front of the graphic, which is getting in the way of variable information. And so often you look at a graphic and you see right at the front of the graphic all of this fancy pipework and physical equipment. And the information that you require is now pushed to the back of the graphic and it's difficult to read. We want the opposite. We want the physical stuff that's just a reference to be right at the back of the graphic, barely visible, just a reference. Then the variable information that's coming from the control systems to give you the information about normal operations. And then in front of that, we want to understand when something is getting abnormal, it's moved outside of normal, So again, that needs to be further in the front, and we do that by using colour, for example, or we do a change so it again stands out. And then when something's getting into the point where it needs action, it's an alarm and it's got to jump off the graphic. We want it to be really dominant on the graphic. And that's the mistake that people have made in the past and are still making today. They're spending too much time on things that are unimportant. I saw one graphic that had a beautiful picture of a control room and all the knobs in the control room, even though it wasn't accurate, and a boiler system with flames and stuff like that. The flames were there whether it was on or off, so it wasn't even accurate, but it looked nice, right? And, you know, sort of a big flare when there was no flare, right? There was just a pilot on. And so, again, it might look good, but it's reinforcing wrong information because it's not accurate. So, again, what we try to get people to understand is that's just nonsense, right? And we've got to focus on the important things first and then the normal things. And the reference things really need to be just reference. They're just stuck there in the background. So we apply a lot of detail today into clarity, making sure things are readable, that things are consistent. You know, if you've got a button on one screen, if you use it on another screen, it's in the same place so that people know where to look for things, where to look for navigation points, etc. They're consistently in the same place on every graphic. You know, we also, if you've got multiple furnaces, instead of just copy and pasting and then, you know, sort of changing the number, that can often lead to human error and somebody getting on the wrong furnace. So if you have three furnaces, we would redesign the graphics so the left-hand side one is to the left of the screen, the right-hand side one's to the right of the screen, and the one in the middle is in the middle of the graphic, so that when you physically look at it, you can sort of say, oh, that's the right one, that's the left one, this is the middle one, or the north, the south, the east, the west, wherever. Just by, you know, the layout is reinforcing to you which one you're on and tries to get some of that human error. We see lots of human errors with graphics, and a lot of it's to do with trying to squeeze stuff on, giving too much information, not having a hierarchy, and you know, not drilling down for information, trying to put it all onto one page. It just gets overwhelming for people, and they don't notice change on it anyway. The purpose of an operator is to detect, diagnose, and respond. If you can't detect, we failed. We never get to the other two parts. So the detection is critical, and it requires good alarm management, it requires good HMI design, and the pair of them have to work hand in hand in providing which one's going to be the detection. My philosophy is I never want the alarm to come in. I want to detect it a long time. The moment it's moved outside of operating limits, I want to be on top of that and correcting it. And I never ever want to get to the point of an alarm. Of course, we will get to the point of alarm if we have critical equipment failures that you can't do anything about it. You can't stop them. It's just sort of, it's stopped, right? It's jammed up, right? But there are many occasions where things just drift. And if we'd have caught it, we could have got there before the alarm, before the domino effect that I talked about, and, you know, prevented a lot of headaches. We partner with other customers. For example, we have a project at the moment with P66 in Sweeney, and they have three different people building graphics for them. Honeywell's one, Lind Associates are one, and Mustang are another company. And to help consistency, we're the common thread. We're drawing the level one graphics and giving it to each of those vendors to build, and we're trying to build the consistency into it, and we're using our cadet task analysis methodology to get what information needs to go onto the display, and then we're doing the creative layout And then basically one of these three vendors is going to be building the graphics based on that specification. And so that's how often we get involved in a project like that. And we don't only work with one supplier, we were actually working with three different ones. And we have a good relationship with each of them. And basically we're providing all the information that needs to go onto overview displays. Now, when it comes to the level three displays, the detailed displays, the P&ID type view, each of these vendors is often more than capable of doing that themselves. And so often our customer just gives that to them as a package. Occasionally they'll ask us to review them and sort of make suggestions about how to make a level two graphic from between the level one and the level three. So we'll develop the level two graphics, and again, the same way the other people will build the graphics. We don't do any of that building. We don't have any tools to do that. You know, basically we have Visio or something, and we will draw it and sort of pass it over to somebody to then turn it into a graphic on a DCS system or a SCADA system. But we can actually go down and, some customers have asked us to actually design all the level threes and then give them to a third party to build them. So that's the sort of separation we've got. And we try to work closely with one or two different companies so that we develop a good relationship. You know, often we've gone in where there's been another supplier that's built the graphics and done a lousy job of them, and the operators hate them, and we've had to go in and fix them. We've done that just recently for a big project in Louisiana. Operators sort of thought this was the worst thing that's ever happened to them, and of course it's their first experience of grayscale graphics, and because of the lack of knowledge of the company that came in and did those graphics and built them, they did a lousy job, and it just leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth. And we had to do a lot of convincing that this can work, and showing them and help getting them involved. And that's a big thing about we're a participatory company. We don't do it ourselves. We work with the operators, and we guide them into a better solution, and they feel ownership of that. And they put in their input, which is their knowledge about how it works, into the design, and we come up with a better design. So we try to follow the name of our company, user-centered design. It's all about the user, and we work very closely with the user and have a good relationship with the end operators. And most of them respect us. And I think at the end of every project I've done recently, the operators have come and said, this was fun. I didn't realize this was going to be like this. I'm looking forward to seeing the end results. This has been a good experience. And so getting that sort of feedback makes you feel good. And I think the customers appreciate it as well when they're hearing the feedback from their operators, who came from a, sort of reactive, didn't like, don't want, to now, this was a good experience, and we're looking forward to seeing the new results. So I think that was good. I think HMI design is something that's still evolving. Yes, we have a life cycle model, but when we start talking specifically about what does a level one or level two graphic look like, I think there's some variety, and that variety is going to be based on the control room, how light it is, how dark it is, how close it is, the screen is to the operator. You know, if it's 10 or 40 feet away, you're limited on amount of text or numbers you can use on that screen. You have to use just symbols, objects. If the screen is within 3 feet of the operator, you can do a lot of different things. So you're going to see different ways of laying out information, and there's not just one way of doing it. It's going to be based on a lot of different factors, from the experience of the operator, what type of information, the way they're used to seeing information, etc., and what new objects and what new tools you can use to try to turn data into information. So I think that's going to be a resounding change in the industry as we start seeing the development of different types of ways of putting the information out. Some of them are going to be data-driven. Some of them are going to be qualitative. And again, just be able to show the difference between good and bad. And then them able to look down to their detail displays to get to more information. But just giving that detection, that first, hey, there's a problem over here, right? Go and look for it now in more detail. So I think that's what we're going to experience. We're going to experience some creative ways of trying to break through this barrier of, if we've got 40,000 tags, right? That's 40,000 different pieces of analog or digital information. How do we put that in context for an operator to understand whether it's good or bad, it's whether it's working, it's not working, it needs its attention or not? And I think that's the challenge that we face today is managing all that information and bringing clarity to the operator. And that's what we're good at. So this is Ian Nimmer with User-Centered Design Services. I'm the president of User-Centered Design. We are very active in human-machine interface design, and if anybody would like information, we have papers on our website that you can download. If you would like further information, please contact us, or if you would like a proposal for either a workshop, a gap analysis, or development of a philosophy style guide, or you would just like help reviewing your graphics, we're available to do that. We've also been involved in incident investigations after an incident to help understand what was the contribution of either the alarm system or the HMI to the accident and what needs to be done to make sure that's prevented by changing the graphics or rationalising the alarm system. So please feel free to contact any of us. Our contact information is available on the website, and it's www.mycontrolroom.com.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the My Control Room podcast. For more information on Ian and user-centered design services, please visit mycontrolroom.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.